Hold
It's
on.
pretty new. It's pretty new. What's going on? We're live now, by the way. I just hit start. A little sneak attack.
Yeah, I assumed. Yeah, I mean, no warning.
No warning.
That's how we go. We rock and roll.
Yeah, dude. Congrats on the graduation. You're now in just normal life. You're like a normal civilian now.
Yeah. For a little bit. Gonna travel a little bit. Just doing a ton of podcasting, trying to get back on the workout, train, golf, fishing, family, basically time with friends, you know, just trying to catch up on the stuff that you missed for the last couple of years, several years. So you know how it goes.
Yeah, man. When I was texting you about if we can reschedule timing today, I was like, oh, he's been through this. He knows that trauma call sucks and he's going to understand. And then I was like, well, he's done now. He has a life. He has a scheduled life now. And he's not used to this add-on bullshit we have in residency. And but dude, thanks for having me on the show. And thanks for being flexible, really.
Thanks for coming on. And I am flexible. The way I'm like, is like, dude, if we have 15 minutes now, let's get 15 minutes in and we could always do another one in the future. And having that dimension of a part one, part two, I find it's just like, it's more content. It's more things for people to listen to. It's more exposure for you. I find it fun. But yeah, if it's a crunch on your schedule, dude, we shut it down. We keep moving, you know?
Yeah, man. Your podcast was interesting to me. And it was actually very great to see your podcast take off, you know, during the past couple of years. Because, you know, I started a podcast back in COVID time. And it was weird because I was a lower level back then. And, you know, I was on a roll. I was getting a decent amount of followers on my page. And then a senior said something to me and it really shut me down and just stopped the podcast back in COVID. They were like, well, we don't feel like you're qualified to talk on these topics. So I was like, man, am I just putting a target on my head right now? And so I stopped it. And so that's why I think your podcast is great. I mean, it's really taken off. It kind of brought the OMFS community together via your podcast and you have such good mentorship through it. And so, I mean, good thing you have this platform, man.
I appreciate it. I try to get a lot of people on a chat. I'm connecting with you through it. So it's a way to meet people. It's a way for us to develop our friendship and professional relationships. So, dude, I had similar issues early on in residency and it's so funny. And then all of a sudden, the last 6 months, it's like, wow, you know, oh my God. And all of a sudden, everyone loves it. It was like, it got mentioned by like three attendings at the graduation dinner. And it's like, you might have been the one to file the complaint, I guess. Anyway, but early on, the first year, they're like, yeah, you don't know enough knowledge about it. But isn't that the whole point? Because you're portraying, you're giving a visual, you know, you're literally walking people through as you learn things, right? Mm-hmm. And it's always good to mention a disclaimer. It's like, and by the way, I'm still learning how to do, maybe it's a laceration rip, maybe I'm still learning how to do close reduction for a certain mandible fracture in the beginning, you know, your first couple of years of residency. I think it's so good to make content, right? And you always have to, other disclaimers, like you're not representative of the program, it's personal views. But yeah, the experience is, and it's not about you necessarily, it's about your experience. And that's what makes it unique. That's what makes it interesting. And that's what makes it like, it's got to be a buffer. You just can't shoot down other people for with their content creation. I don't know. Dude, I think you should keep the podcast going. I really think you should get back on.
Yeah, no, it's been a long hiatus, like 2 year hiatus. And I'm having actually, you're like frozen on my end on this thing.
Oh, I am?
Yeah. I think it might be my connection.
You look good on here, man. You got strong cheekbones. Your hair's looking great.
Yeah, dude, I'm like the anatomy for a zygoma fracture, you know? Like, I'm like, people use me a lot for like a zygoma fracture anatomy situation. It's kind of fun.
Hey, come here.
Exactly.
How's the day going? So you said you got an add-on case?
Yeah, you know, we're on trauma week and it's my second day of being chief and it's been, I mean, dude, I love it. I'm so positive. It's so fun. But a lot of admin BS that comes along with it. And then a lot of, you know, you're like this like at this role where you're getting a lot of shit from under, right? All your residents from under are just complaining to you. And then you're getting a lot of shit from up above. A lot of the attendings expect a lot from you, and which is appropriate. And you're trying to be this guy who's like trying to be organized and be fair, but you also recognize it's your last year in residency. And I want to talk to you about this today for the podcast is how do you best treat your chief year while being satisfying your own self-interest, but then also looking good to attendings, but then also taking care of your underclassmen. That was a good topic because you're big into mentorship. That would be a good one to talk to you about.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's such an interesting thing. I find that a lot of people in the medical space, the healthcare space, especially on the medical and dental school side, a lot of people, some people they played an instrument in the past. They were on this sport team. But I think everyone at some place, at some point in time in their trajectory towards, say, oral surgery or dentistry or medicine, you know, becoming a doctor, they kind of put those things to the side and it becomes a sacrifice and they hone 100% in on learning the medicine, learning the dentistry, getting into oral surgery, whether it be studying for the CBSC, externships, GPA, ranking. And then you kind of lose that experience of a team role, a team position, a team atmosphere, leadership experience, communication experience, how to work as a team going forward. And then everyone just kind of gets left out to dry. Everyone's in it for themselves. And, you know, that was one of the things I thought I saw on externships. I was like, oh, shoot, you know, Montefiore, VCU, a little bit of NYU. I was like, I finally see that because I played basketball in college. And I was like, I see this team experience again on the externships. And then I got into residency and I was like, holy, this is not what I saw on my week of externships. We got like 12 of the, there was like 10 of the residents out for like, they took the other extern and myself out to dinner one night. And I couldn't even, for several months, no one went out for dinner when I started residency. So I'm like, what is going on here? This is not what I thought. So yeah, I think that's just like my little intro to the topic is I think people in residencies on both sides, medicine and dentistry, I think we're actually, despite what we may believe personally, I think overall, broad scope, we're actually very under experienced in leadership roles and utilization of communication to kind of bring the team together, to motivate each other, not put fear in. Everyone loves to instill fear in each other. Just like what they told you, you're a little under qualified to be talking about this stuff on social media right now. I disagree. You state where you are. I'm a first year oral surgery, whatever it is. And then say, this is what I'm learning up to this point. And then someone could hop in into the comments and be like, well, it's actually this or this. Then everyone else that sees it learns, you learn. And we move forward together. What are your thoughts? I'm curious.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that statement of the leadership, because the leadership that we get, the training that we get here is just passed on from attendings, passed on from chief residents. And, you know, we're operating almost always on survival mode. You're constantly busy doing a bunch of things at once. And so your tone of voice becomes more terse. You're more aggressive in the way you talk. You're more blunt. Sometimes you just need shit done. And so you will instill fear into your teammates and say, we need this done. I don't care how it gets done, but it needs to get done. And I think that gets passed down. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's helpful for the team environment. I don't know if that's detrimental. Does it get shit done? It does. But is it good long term? I don't think so. And that's what I'm trying to change during my year, or I'm trying to focus on, is how do I become a chief where I can be encompassing everyone's self-interest while getting things done and while, you know, moving our team forward. And the best way I thought of it was, or the best way that I could accomplish that was through really my Instagram page that I run, is I'm so focused on surgical education. I love teaching. I love making out all these little like figures that I do on Instagram and really drawing out my thoughts on how I look at surgery. I mean, through that, hopefully I can be viewed as this chief that, you know, cares about your learning, wants to progress you forward in ways that I didn't have when I was a younger level resident.
That's exactly it. And I love your Instagram. I love how you're asking ChatGPT to do a diagram. What was that? That was the coronal approach?
Yeah, dude, I was trying to prompt, dude, I've been working on this for hours. I was prompting ChatGPT to show me a bicoronal approach. You know, my thing on Instagram, I try my best not to post any patient specific photos or anything. I just feel like I'm trying to maintain their privacy at least for the time being. And I'm just not at that point where I want to post anything. And so I'm prompting ChatGPT to make me these things. And, you know, my first version, the one you saw probably, is like this anatomy that doesn't make any sense to any Netters fan. But then a couple of prompts later, I'm able to get it to something that looks like a bicoronal approach, which I think is kind of fun.
Yeah. And you're learning prompt. One, you're learning how to use AI. Prompt engineering is what everyone's calling it these days. I think that's great. You're learning how to prompt it. Number two, dude, by the way, this is a side note. Have you been posting this on LinkedIn too?
I haven't.
Are you kidding? How many? You've been putting out so many excellent posts for so long. Can you please start posting them? And if you have time, I know it's going to be tough this year, chief year, and congrats, by the way, but if you could go back and post some of these excellent information and conceptual, visual posts onto LinkedIn, you're going to get some extraordinary feedback there. I'm telling you.
Yeah, bro, you're like the social media expert. I've been stuck at just one medium for now. I mean, my wife gets at me just for even running this one page, because we have a baby at home. And this takes a lot of time, as you probably know. Yeah, I need to get out there to other platforms.
It's just like, especially with Instagram, I would just copy and paste it. And maybe if you have something written, whether it be, you know, in the visual, copy and paste it into the caption too. If you have the caption, copy and paste it over, you know, because I'm also, I think, as you know this, I'm big on ROI, you know, return on investment, and minimizing the amount of time it takes to do something, right? So like my videos, I was just walking out of the hospital, talking about what happened in the day. I step inside where the air conditioning is. I take 10 minutes to just cut out all the ums and ahs. And in 10, 15 minutes, I'm posting and I'm moving on with the day, you know, time to move on to the workout, time to go get dinner, do a podcast. But dude, I think the ROI would be extraordinary for you with the amount of time and effort you're putting into these, and they're detailed and they're excellent on LinkedIn. And I don't want to say anything, but you might even get some job offers literally just from all that effort that you're doing. No, I'm serious. I got a lot of people reaching out to me on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah. I had someone reach out to me from a different department, not in this country actually, to speak on some topics because of my posts. And it was, you know, definitely an honor to get that kind of invitation, but I get it. Yeah. I need to learn the way you're efficiently doing things. Not there yet.
You know, starting things during chief year might not be the right time, but I mean, as you know, it's all also like, when is the right time? You gotta do it now. You gotta try it. So whenever you get that chance, but, yeah, man, congrats. So we're 2 days in, 3 days in, because it's Wednesday, right? So you're 3 days in this year?
We are, we're 2 days in, because I started July 1st, which was yesterday, and July 2nd. Yeah, but you know, so far it's been great. I've been teaching a lot, and a lot of my thoughts are then spewed onto, you know, Instagram. You know, one thing I found interesting about your podcast is it's not, or rather, what I find challenging about a podcast forum, and it's something that I've been thinking about before I get back into podcasting, is it is so hard to teach via podcast surgically, as you probably know, without visuals, without videos. I mean, it's just impossible to teach surgical concepts. And recently I was on a different podcast for jaw surgery. And as we were talking, it was just impossible to explain anything. I mean, do you have any idea how I can get back into podcasting, focused on surgical education, focusing on surgical concepts?
Yes, I would say, look, this would be my thing. There's got to be three things, and you should try all of them, and whichever one works, you know, right? It's just a simple game of trial and error. More complex, adding to a layer of depth of that, I would say start with TikTok Live. And in the live, the prompt, it's like, you could say like, ask any question. Now you could say, ask any surgery on the head, neck, face, ask any jaw surgery question, ask any laceration of the face question, ask any dental related question, ask any dental surgery question. You get it, right? And then that should prompt, you wear scrubs, and I get this is one of the chief roast things that like, it's like, oh, this kid, he throws his scrubs on to go on TikTok lives. And it's like, yeah, because then if you wear, and I tried this, if you wear a button down, they're like, oh, what do you do? Let's get somewhere. So I wear the scrubs and they're like, oh, yeah, they're in the medical space. Why'd you pick dental school over medical school? Like, now we can get somewhere. If you really want to get into education, it would probably get into, it's similar to mentorship in a way, right? Because you get asked a question, you get to answer it. And then you could kind of phrase it in the language that they find most receptive. Because you could say, you could answer something in one way, in another way, in one language, in another language, right? The delivery, the tone, all of it gets, the way they receive that translates differently. You know what I mean? So you can literally, it's just something I noticed on a TikTok live. I'll answer the medicine versus dentistry question like every other time I do a TikTok live, like once a week. And then I'll answer it differently, but only these ones do well. And these ones just go over everyone's head. And answering questions on surgery or teaching and educating on surgery, I think that would be the best way to go about it. You know what I mean? You'll find yourself answering the same thing 10 times, and that 11th time, it finally hits someone, or that 12th time, you finally answered it in a succinct and concise way where you're like, oh, now I can say this quicker and move on with it. But a lot of reps. You got to get a lot of reps in with that. TikTok Live would be one way. For podcasting, you didn't find that it was effective by having someone on, like a guest?
You know, when you talk about concepts, I think when you're at a higher level, if you're talking to other surgeons or chief residents maybe, you can understand and visualize what they're talking about in real time. But I think when you're on the earlier stages of training, it's almost impossible to kind of follow along. And then during the conversation, you get stuck thinking about what they said previously, and then you forget everything else. And I guess the what I'm trying to get at is my whole point, or my whole motivation for doing any of this stuff, surgical education, podcasting, or whatever, it's this whole problem that I see through, that I have experienced and seen throughout residency, of how surgical education, surgical technique, pearls, it's all about you being at the right place, at the right time, with the right mindset, and with the right prior education to be ready to accept this new knowledge, right? We almost treat surgical education and technique as like secrets that we want to like keep behind walls. I don't know, when I was an intern and when I was a lower level, it was like, I had to be privileged and have the honor to get this pearl from an attending or a pearl from a chief resident or something. And I just found that completely inefficient. And you, I mean, you and I like your Instagram page and everything about you because you're just an efficient guy. I mean, the way you text, we're going to be on in 12 minutes. Dude, that's the way I talk. We're going to be on in set. It's very specific, very efficient. And I just found that a lot of residency surgical education was so slow, inefficient, impossible to coordinate to have everyone learn the same thing. I mean, I guess I'm just kind of spewing my thoughts here, but I'm just so frustrated in how residency structured this way where, like, I can't share my knowledge with someone who wasn't in the OR. And hence why I want to get back into podcasting or find mediums where I can kind of spread the knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of how I work too. I mean, sometimes I talk a little too fast and it's all herky jerky all over the place. But I think just spewing knowledge and seeing what dart lands on the board is great. And dude, also, this is our part one. We'll have another part or two in the future. And just spewing thoughts, having a good conversation, and then our thoughts, and you're going to get back into podcasting. You know, I think we know it's going to all come together. You know, we're just, you know, brainstorming methods and stuff. But yeah, you know, yeah, there's a lot of gatekeeping in with that education in the medical and surgical communities. And then kind of teaching it and the education, because you're saying it's all verbal, because how are you going to, like, you might need like a board in the back, or you need a mannequin to show certain things. Were you alluding to that as well, or is that separate?
No, I'm more alluding to how, for example, I mean, I love jaw surgeon, so I guess I'll use jaw surgeon as an example, but the feeling of seating the condyle, we talk about it, and we might tell our intern about it, and we might just like throw all these theories about it to the intern. But it is rarely the case where you will stop in the middle of the case and let the intern feel what I mean by I'm seating the condyle like this in this class two advancement. And I'm pushing super hard. We're motivated by either the speed of surgery or to get home or for the senior level person to just do all the work, right? They don't find it valuable enough or they don't stop to think of how valuable this could be for the learner. And I don't know, I call this the attending move and everything. I feel like in surgical education, when there is an attending move, basically the move where the attending takes over every time, that move is the most critical move in surgery. Like it's the most critical step. And I feel like the attending, when they do that, or when the chief resident does that, they need to stop and repeat that same movement in the hands of another learner. Because otherwise, you're not going to learn that until you're a chief, until you finally get your shot. And I just feel like that's just either unfair, it's inefficient, it takes too long, and there's you could be missing out on exponential gains if you had learned this earlier.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that goes back to the learn one, do one, teach one. It sounds like that ball's dropping a little, the torch is dropping a little bit there. Yeah, that's a problem. When an attending just takes over, then it's like, well, then your chief resident missed out on that experience and you've done it how many times? Why do you need to do it again? It's time for the chief level resident to do it. If the chief's already done it, maybe do it one more time, but at some point, a couple times at the senior level, and then maybe the senior does it, right? Chief checks. All right, show the intern. Yeah, I mean, learn one, do one, teach one.
Yeah, I see this a lot. Like, I mean, just to go back to a jaw surgery example, like when we're seating the whole max face complex and we're like seating the maxilla, you know, feeling for interferences, what the senior level person or the attending will do is they'll feel the interference and they'll start clipping away. They'll like get rid of the interference and they'll start checking again. And they're like, okay, now it's fully seated. But that moment of you seating the condyle, seating the whole complex, and feeling for the interference, that is the critical move. It's not removing the interference. That's just monkey labor, you know, that anyone can do that. But it's that tactile feel, the smell, the taste of it, that you really can only get real time. I mean, my Instagram posts are, I mean, I think about these all throughout the week because I'm like, how do I explain this in a way simply enough that anyone from any level could understand, but it's not boring where it feels like some anatomy lesson from Netters, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on Omax face posts? Like the one he did, what was it two days ago, Monday on the 30th. He did like a board style question. I mean, that it must have taken him a couple hours to do all that, but I thought pretty in depth. How do you like about that style or no?
Well, first off, Omax Face, I knew something like this was coming. I knew he was going to start some sort of board prep course. Like there has to be a way to monetize this stuff, right? So I'm so happy for whoever that, I don't know who this person is. I've been following him since I was a dental student, but so happy for that person. That style of learning, I think is great. You know, it's It's hard to teach through questions on social media, unless it's very simple, though. I like the way you post questions, I think, through your other, I think it was it's like some pre-dental mentorship page that you have.
Students of Dentistry, we have that. But yeah, I make the questions and I use ChatGPT to put them together to get a little speed going. But then usually like, but yeah.
Yeah, the questions you post are, I think, great for this type of medium because it's usually shorter questions with shorter answers. But the board style questions that some people post, you really have to just sit there and think. But a lot of people are, you know, when you're on Instagram, you're just walking or like you're on the toilet and you're just like looking through the stuff. You're not going to think really hard about these questions.
Right, right. That's why I like the LinkedIn medium because this guy, Haydar Alsimak, some dentist in Sweden, he'll post like a whole paragraph long answer to it. That's really in depth. And then I give the explanation of the question on the podcast and I'll include people that do that. But a couple seconds, but I find education through questions is pretty helpful. And then your delivery of the answer and explanation is where the detail comes from. And that could give your creativity into the, you know, the description, you know, and how you describe that answer to elaborate there. Taking a step back, we were talking about, you had said when you're talking to an intern, for example, as a chief, and you're like, look, I don't care how this needs to get done, but it needs to get done. I like to make sure that I tried to do this as much as I could as a chief was, how can we get this done as quickly as possible? Let's throw all the tasks on the desk. You need to print that out. You need to get those consents. Who's on the H&Ps? What am I doing? Guys, what can I do to help out? I'm going to print those out or I'll do the H&Ps. You do that. You know what I mean? I always would try and implement that. How are we, literally we, going to get this done? And I would try and stay late on, maybe not always until everyone leaves, although that was my goal. What's another one? With the maxilla, when you're seating the complex or you're seating the condyle, sometimes it's good. Let them seat it and then you check it over, right? No, you need to do this a little bit further back. For example, when we were doing the advancement and you're putting the plate on, personally, I always like to put the plate on the distal segment and then pull back to hit the holes if you use the custom made guide in the proximal segment. Because I had, there might have been a case previously of someone else, maybe, where they did it opposite, where they put the plate on the proximal segment first, and then they went to plate the anterior segment. Now, it might have been, you know, a couple millimeters, but it's no longer in the fossa at that point, right? By pulling the proximal segment towards it, putting the holes in, it was, you know what I mean? But that's a concept that you need to learn to tell. So you see what I'm saying? Yeah.
So with that, no, I love that style of leadership. It's a very horizontal approach to leadership, which I'm in full agreement with. Now, coming back to my qualm with just surgical education is, so that intern, let's call him, you know, Fred, like Fred benefited by working with you that day. He felt the condo. I was like, oh, I fucking get it, man. Like, I know this thing now. Now, how do you then tell the other residents about this who weren't in that case? How do you teach that to another resident who's on an off service or who's on an anesthesia rotation? Or let's say it's an inverted L case, like intraoral inverted L. You know, you get one a month or one every 6 months. It's a super rare case. Like, how do you teach others about that case or the small little pearls if they literally can't be there? Like, I don't know. I'm fortunate enough where I got to experience a lot of rare cases during my residency and rare techniques, and I was able to be the primary operator. But, you know, sometimes I'm like, well, I feel bad for my other colleagues who might not ever experience that during their time here. And I, you know, the reason why I care about this is because these moments of these aha moments or these moments where you now are like, oh, this surgery's so easy, I get it. Like, I've now deciphered this whole like puzzle. I think those moments are what motivates and influences your career trajectory going forward. During your whole residency, if you've never placed a custom joint, from start to finish, and you, if you didn't get all those pearls, you'll probably not want to do it when you graduate.
That's 100% true. I didn't do any custom joints I didn't do any open joints during residency. Yeah. And I won't be doing them afterwards. How can I possibly say that I'm confident in doing them?
That's called a blessing. You're in a lucky spot to never do a TMJ case after you're done.
hey, don't give it away now. I got to look like a victim.
Are you focusing total dental alveolar afterwards?
I would love to do orthognathic surgery, but there's just so many issues with it, as you know. And now I'm finding issues with location, like other hospitals in similar as New Jersey, things like New Jersey was paying $5,000, Connecticut pays $7,000 for a surgeon to take call per month at the hospital. Yeah. So like $5,000 a month. Long Island, they're not paying. I just found this out 2 weeks ago with one of the associates I'm going to be working in the same practice with. He's like, yeah, you're not going to get paid for taking call on Long Island. They think they have so many surgeons that they don't need to pay anyone. But if you're going to be a quote unquote board, truly board certified oral surgeon, you need to pass the written boards, the oral boards, and show them that you have hospital privileges. But why should we be doing, continue to do free work? And now, sure, you can make the argument, well, surgeons make so much, they should give back to the community. Yes, but you can't manipulate and abuse the fact that these people dedicate more than half their lives towards this profession. And you can't, in order to do orthognathic surgery, I'd feel much more comfortable in a hospital setting. But if I don't, I don't know, man. Orthognathic surgery is fun. I love the opportunity and the fact that you could change someone's life through their appearance, change their confidence. But we need to make it more, you know, we need to support providers to be able to do it. I mean, that you're making $1,200 for a full case or, you know, an average of $600 a jaw reimbursed in New York for, or $1,200 a jaw per jaw in New York when, like, you know, the private practices are charging like $100,000, $120,000 for the full orthognathic case. I don't know.
Have you ever heard that joke from surgeons who'll say, oh, it's an expensive hobby that we have? They call orthognathic surgery our expensive hobby. You know, it's just something we do because we like doing it, and it probably doesn't make any money. It's funny to say that, but when we say that, it should kind of raise an eyebrow. Like, that's a problem. Like, these surgeries are very important. They treat, you know, so many conditions of the head and neck. And when we say that it's just an expensive hobby and I'm just losing money on it, you know, we should really question that. I mean, I know some surgeons who have to get around this, you know, this loss by, they'll charge a cash planning fee from their office. And I mean, which I don't think is a wrong idea, but I mean, the fact that insurance doesn't reimburse for your planning and your time for the workup of a jaw surgery patient is just ridiculous.
Months worth of planning. Very risky, very critical surgery. Yeah, nothing of it. It's unbelievable. It really is.
You know, your point about call, how we dedicate our whole lives to this, or the half our lives to this, and you know, we can't just do free labor. I completely agree. I mean, even in my community out here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of surgeons don't take call. And the surgeons who do take call will then complain like, oh, you're not serving the community. And how dare you have the skill that the community doesn't have and they'll benefit from you. But, you know, you're a money guy. And so if you rely on a system, if a system relies on the pure generosity of others, it will not work. You have to make it monetary for everyone. Insurance companies have to make money. Hospital has to make money. Someone has to pay. The surgeon who does the work has to make money. And otherwise, it just falls apart. And I don't know. I think profession is confused on our identity and how we should go forward. These are topics for another day.
Yeah. This is a big can of worms to open. Hey, we'll go into this on part two. And it's frustrating because then you go to the dental school, NYU, some of these dental students don't even know that oral surgeons place implants. I was shocked to find that out 3 years ago. I was like,
wow, I never got that experience.
I couldn't, numerous, because the dental students come over and work in the Bellevue Clinic. That's like the city hospital of NYU. We go NYU, the VA, Bellevue, and then the dental school. We go in like this rotation. And so many dental students, they were like, you guys place implants? I thought you just do wisdom teeth and sedations. Yeah, we place implants. So, and why is that important? So all these other, generally implants aren't covered by insurance, right? So biggest ROI in dentistry, if it's not cosmetics and veneers, it's implants. So all the people that don't do cosmetics and veneers, everyone's trying to push to get into that fee for service thing because that's the biggest ROA. That's how you keep your lights on. And there's this squeeze because the insurance company I know I'm stating everything that you already know, but I'm just doing this for listeners. It's a big problem because now you have GPs, you have obviously perio, but you even have pros and endo getting requirements to place a couple implants in their residency. I know endo made it thing. So now everyone's trying to place his implants. So dentistry is becoming just implantology over time, unless we create a new insurance company, we actually incentivize preventative care again. Dentists can actually make a living off of doing a couple surface fillings. But there's this whole push to go implants, and it's like 99% or more of implants at the dental school go to perio. And now So just to come full circle, you were saying this identity. There's a problem of identity in oral maxillofacial surgery because we're going to the hospital setting. We own the hospital setting in all of dentistry, right? GPs, I know GPR residencies don't even take call there. So they do not know. It's only oral surgery owning the hospital setting. But there's this identity because it's like we're trying to go into the OR and get hospital privileges and rights and OR access. But then we're losing stuff that I think nobody's actually talking about from the dental school side, from the dental alveolar side. Because perio is soaking it all up. They're all doing exposing bonds in the clinic now. It's a bloody mess, some of these cases. I don't know if you've seen any of them. But yeah, so as we try to find our identity in oral surgery in the hospital setting, we're turning a complete blind eye to everyone all the specialties just coming into the invasive space, and they don't know how to manage these complications. When something goes wrong and they got to go to the hospital, who sees them? Us. And so it's, and this comes back to the lack of reimbursement leads to lack of respect. I don't think we got there yet, but you're saying like you need to incentivize taking call, right? We were saying that. And then you said everything else that needs to be incentivized financially, just, but it comes down to respect. Look at some of these patients, unfortunately, they don't respect the treatment they're getting because they don't have to pay a thing. And when they have no skin in the game, they don't show up for appointments. They don't come for the follow-up visit. Oh, it's just this, you know? So it's a lot of things I touched on. It's all over the place, I know, but I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, what I see in dentistry, and it also spills into oral surgery, because we are a dental profession, is it's price wars. Like, it's all bidding wars now. You know, the dentist down the road will do a full arch for, you know, $25,000, while the oral surgeon charges $60,000. And so now we're stuck in this price war game. We have locked ourselves in. And so what even oral surgeons will do, and they'll haggle with the patient. Oh, like, we'll throw in a free bone graft, or, oh yeah, the whatever bone graft we do, it'll be free. It's all included. Yeah, the extraction is part of it. It's a package deal. And my attending actually said this today to me. He said, that's just fraud. As a professional, you should be charging what you actually did, and no one should fucking question it. And if you don't, otherwise it's just fraud. If you just, you know, blatantly say it, it just sucks that we're at a point where we're constantly battling with patients and trying to explain why our fees are higher. And you know, if they raise an eyebrow to that, we then lower the fee, or we'll throw in a free toothbrush or something. And it's just an interesting trend that I see even oral surgeons getting into, because we, you know, we're in the full arch realm and we're in the implant realm, and that world is now occupied by many different inhabitants.
Mm.
And, you know, it's not going to change. It'll just get worse. It's just very confusing for patients. I mean, there's an implant residency now, I think down in Florida. Like, that is so confusing. I mean,
they're doing it at NYU too. Yeah, technology residency.
Someday we're going to have a third molar residency. You know, there probably is one.
This is because we're tracing the trajectory of medicine, the whole medical route. It's like, you know, that joke they make, like, oh, you're getting your fellowship on your left ear surgery now, you know, like the ear, nose, throat, then they go in the ear, they go in the left ear. It's like that stupid analogy, but this is the direction we're going. I honestly think insurance is the root cause of all this, right? Because they're basically saying, like, the specialist in that is getting a higher fee for that. But now, you know, I don't know if you know Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad Poor Dad. He was saying the more specialized you become, the more vulnerable you become as like an associate, to become an employee, right? The owner is someone who knows a vast amount of everything. And the more specialized you are an expert, you know, the most in this one thing. But not everyone needs that one thing all the time in medicine, in dentistry, in oral surgeries. It creates a level of vulnerability. And that's where these DSOs come in, right? But again, I'll preach this to the end of time. I think it's the problem of the lack of reimbursement. I mean, the 1970s is when dental insurance became very dominant. And the maximum, the annual maximum benefit was about $1,500, right? Today, it's still $1,500 to $2,500. But if you trace inflation since the 70s, it would be almost $8,000 that every patient would be getting with their annual maximum. Yeah, the annual maximum. But no one's changing that. You know, for a two-surface filling, if Medicaid B or whatever it is only reimbursing $18 for it, dentists can't keep their lights on by doing fillings anymore, which means preventative care. You know, everything just gets pushed. So yeah, and then it becomes this price war, like you mentioned.
Yeah, you know, we're like digressing from the topics, but this is so interesting. I mean, and you touched on it, and now we're going to unpack this thing, because you mentioned DSOs. And I think this is why DSOs are starting to thrive quite drastically and quite quickly, not only in dentistry, but in oral surgery now. Like, insurance reimbursements are decreasing, overheads going up, staff wages are going up, and insurance authorizations and figuring all that stuff out is ever more complicated now. There's so many loopholes there's so many checkpoints you have to pass to even get the answer. And man, I mean, I just don't know when this is going to end with you know, the complicated process that we have to go through. And I mean, DSOs, you have huge ones in dentistry. You have Heartland, you have MB2, you have just plenty of them. And a lot of these even dental DSOs are starting to buy out oral surgery offices and now becoming private equity. You have your own dedicated oral surgery private equity groups. I mean, will this be a bubble? I'm not sure. Is it good for patient care? Absolutely not. You know, like, at the end of the day, the person who gets the short end of the stick is probably the patient.
Yeah, patients, and then secondarily is providers. And one more thing, what else is at a maximum right now? Debt, especially student debt. Right.
Oh,
so now you're already starting your career. You're underwater. If you're not at zero, you're underwater. So now we're handicapping these people starting their careers. More than 50% of dental students now are graduating with more than a quarter million debt as of 2022, it doesn't matter, right? More than a quarter million debt. Everyone's going out of dental school now. So you're starting someone underwater. Another thing, the DSOs, when they own so many offices, they have millions of patient charts under certain insurance plans, right? Then they could go to those insurance plans and haggle with them and say, look, you've given me $750 for this crown. Going forward next year, we're going to need $1,250. Okay, you're going to need to do this for us. And then if they say no, the DSO goes, well, you know, we have 126 offices and millions of patients. So we're going to say no to Delta Dental anymore. We're going to go over here. If you're a two, three practice owner, so you own like two, three offices, you don't have that leverage to do. So it's creating this moat around these bigger DSOs. It's monopolization and it's causing competition. It's preventing the little guy from going up, and that's not a free market space. And it will drown out all the little guys and all the little guys that stay little over time because they don't believe in, you know what I mean? I believe in capitalism fully. I mean, if you look at the difference between like North and South Korea, that like chart where they're like, look at North Korea after 150 years, whatever it was, it's like dark at night. And then South Korea was light at night. That is, it's at full scale, right? If we continue.
Did you know I was Korean?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh my gosh. I was like, oh my God, this guy researched me. Yeah.
No, I didn't. No, wait, no, I'm not looking into people's nationalities and stuff. Is that true, by the way? Because I saw that figure where it's like capitalism, communism, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, South Korea, and now we're getting into history, but like, I mean, yeah, the difference between the two countries is just so drastic. They're apart 100 years, you know, like I completely agree with that.
And all I'm saying is the analogy of I do believe in capitalism causing inorganic monopolization creates, you know, you're not letting the little guys come up. If the little guys work as hard as they can and they do everything right, they should be able to work their way up, you know, but you're creating a false, you know what I mean? There's monopolization that like Warren Buffett talks about where it's like Apple created all these new products or like Tesla with electric vehicles are far ahead and their AI, right? But you have a DSO that just owns more offices than the little guy, and the insurance company will give them more money per crown than the little guy. That's unethical. Yeah. So.
Yeah, you know, I think DSOs have taken a different approach now, where they're buying out other offices, but then they'll say, "Oh, but your office is still your office. You can run it the way you want. You can still keep your own branding. You can have your own logo up there still, but we own you." And I mean, it's working for now. I think it'll kick the can on what's to come soon, but. Yeah, man, it's a concerning thing that I'm seeing, especially because I'm graduating next year.
It is very concerning. Let's get to you. What are you looking at? What do you want to do? You want to work in a hospital setting, academia? You want to go private practice? What are your thoughts? Tell me what you're thinking.
Yeah, man, I like you. I'm a very efficient guy. I have a very hard time with inefficiency. It's just my Myers-Briggs personality type. I love getting stuff done. I'm super organized. And so private practice is the way to go for me. Academia, I love it. I love the environment of teaching and then collaborative environment. You can consult other people, but it's way too slow. It's so inefficient. There's so many checks of power, I guess, is the best way to put it. But yeah, private practice for me is the way to go for now. And finding a way to incorporate jaw surgery into my practice would be, I think, very fulfilling. I love jaw surgery. It's life-changing for people. It's an expensive hobby for me. It makes me think a lot. It like prevents me from getting bored. It's the first surgery that really got me into oral surgery. And so do I want to make it my full scope and only scope? Probably not. I still love dental alveolar. I love full arch, zygos, pterygoids. I also love wisdom teeth. I mean, dude, when you have a full day of ASA 1, 15-year-old wisdom teeth, I mean, that is the best day.
Just flies. You just fly through it, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Great day. Yeah. And then every time you take out a wisdom, like every tooth comes out differently more like many, you know, but you know what I mean? You have to do things differently. You have to adapt. Dude, I'm sorry. The AC is not on and I've been sweating this entire chat.
I can't even tell. Your blue scrubs are still blue.
Yeah, but the armpits are black now. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, man. So that's excellent. Have you started looking at all for opportunities? Have you started talking to people out there?
You know, I've been actually talking to people since last year. And what's funny is, you know, so my wife, she's also in dentistry and she owns businesses. And she kept saying, you're too early. No one's going to hire you fucking 1.5 years out. And it kind of is the case. I realized that even though an office wants to hire me, it's hard to predict where that office will be in a year and a half and whether they can grow fast enough to make room for me. But yeah, I've been talking to a lot of people. I have some offers on the way. But
Yeah, it's still, I'm still in search. I'm still thinking about my options on the best way forward on my goals. I have very interesting goals, and so we'll see. We will
Yeah,
see.
and keep talking to everyone that you can get in touch with out there. Just find out is the maximum amount of opportunities that, so you're married, as you said, your wife, right? Congrats. What where and you have a kid now too. Jesus. Wow, you're way ahead of the game. I'm trying to get there. I want to have some kids. Like, now that I'm engaged, I gotta get some. But so you're probably gonna want to be in the same in a similar area where she is, right? You said she owns multiple businesses. Are they? She said she. You said she's in dentistry. Does she own offices or it's like businesses within dentistry? I'm curious.
You know, a little plug for my wife. I mean, my wife has made my residency such a interesting and unique experience because one, she has multiple dental offices. She's very big in business. She understands it. She's very good at leadership skills and just making decisions for the team and for the company. And with that, I think there was a lot of, you know, fortunate experiences I had during residency that not everyone has. And so I'm very fortunate to have that. She sent me to many courses. I've been to many, many CE courses that I want to go to be through her, you know, generosity that I probably have to repay one day. But yeah, I mean, yep, so my wife has been actually, she's, I've never actually said this to her. So your podcast might be the first platform where I say it, but she has been a huge inspiration for me. I mean, she is so good at her work as a general dentist. She is so good at business as a business woman, business owner. And but she's also been a great partner. And I think you could probably attest to this too. Having a great partner in residency is like, I mean, you are so fucking lucky to have. Yeah, I mean, even, I mean, being married or being having a partner in residency in itself, you should be lucky. Like that someone is crazy enough to be with you for this crazy journey. They're not gonna see you for 6 years or 4 years, and they're still willing to stay with you. And that in itself, you're fucking lucky. But on top of that, if that partner understands that you'll be gone, will support you financially here and there, still loves you, still remembers your name, even though you've been home for a week. I mean, those things you really can't trade money for.
100%. I don't think anyone could say it even better than that. I agree. Yeah, man, you need to have a solid partner to make it through you with that. Yeah, and so yeah, this is your 6th year, right? 6 years like that, and but then she's taking the initiative. You know, she's going out there. She's got multiple. So she owns practices. She's a dentist.
Yeah. So she's a dentist. She owns practices, and she wants to own more, which is crazy. I mean, on your topic of DSOs, I'm like afraid that she's gonna become her own mini DSO one day. And but on top of that, I mean, she just has like phenomenal ethics. Like she always talks about how she just cannot lie to patients. She cannot, you know, shortcut them. And so a lot of that has translated to me in residency. I think I learned a lot from her.
Yeah. And you know, like, and DSO is, it comes with a bad connotation, but there's certain opportunities where, and you could have a big multi-practice and still not be a DSO. I mean, I'm going to work for a guy who's got like 8 offices now. He's not a DSO. It's all owned by one guy. But, and some people are meant to be an associate and be great associates. You know what I mean? So it's like, but you can't have where we're getting to that territory over this next decade where it could become like 90% or more DSOs and then less than 10% private practice. Or 80-20. And I think it really needs to stay in the sweet spot around 50-50 or 60-40, one way or the other. Because when you're in a profession where you're dealing with people, the work that we do is for people, taking care of people, you need to keep them at the center. The bigger corporate it gets, I think the less attention gets to the patient. I mean, like, it's not like Amazon. You know, how do you know who just delivered your package today on Amazon? No, you don't, right? And then you could just return the package, but you can't just return a filling. You can't just return that extraction, that dental implant, more or less, you know? But yeah, dude, that is so crucial for people to find a partner. I get a lot of questions on the question answer, the QA segments I do on Instagram, on TikTok Lives, and everyone's like, how do you find someone in residency? How do you, I don't know. And dude, have you ever thought about this? So you're married. I'm in the process of being married over the next year or two. But could you imagine right now where you're at, chief year, you're graduating in a year. Imagine trying to find someone then. Their whole perception of you is distorted because now you're a dentist, you're a surgeon, you're an oral surgeon. And you know what I mean? What if you met your wife right now? You know what I mean? You ever think of that?
Yeah, it'd be different. It would be a lot more transactional than you would want a relationship to be. I mean, a relationship should be transactional, right? Like there's a benefit, a give and take for both parties. Yeah, I mean, meeting someone when you're already at the pinnacle of your struggling journey is different when compared to when if your partner has met you at your lowest of low, right? Like my, you know, I met my wife when I, Jeez, when I like lived in like the basement room of my one of my buddies. I mean, and like anytime I had her over, it was just like this. I just felt so bad. Just like there's no couch, there's no. It's not clean. It's just like this dark, just basement. And just yeah. I mean, she stuck it through with me though.
That's how you know she was the one, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, my girlfriend, she's been sleeping in my apartment. Well, I mean, she has her own apartment that it's like from her parents, but like whenever she would come over, we had a twin bed. We'd be squeezing into this twin bed for 4 or 5 years. And then, people would make fun of you for that little bed, but it was like, great, I don't need you. And then she stuck it through. My girlfriend stuck it through, and that's so funny. Yeah, I think
You
meeting
need
people
those memories. You need those memories.
that too, the hard times, right? Yeah. So tell me about this. I don't want to take up too much. We're almost at an hour now, but and we're gonna do a
Oh,
part
wow.
two. Don't worry about that. But I want to make sure that everything's, okay with you got your case going, right?
Yeah, no, don't. I have time. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Okay. So this is day two, man. Congrats again, Chief Year. This is your trauma week. So your program has weeks on trauma, and you interchange it with plastics and ENT, or tell me about
Yeah,
your structure
so
a little bit.
yeah, so we have two locations that we're at. So in Chief Year, we're at our main hospital, and then we're also at a different hospital on the other months. Yeah, at our main hospital, we're taking call every 3 weeks. We split with plastics and ENT. But at the other hospital that we go to for 6 months out of the year, we cover head and neck call, airway call, 365 days of the year. Full any trauma that comes in. Any airway consult that comes in, any emergent trach that needs to be done, it's done by, me. So it's a very vibrant residency, that's for sure.
Yes, it is. Those are your favorite call nights, huh?
Those are the nights where I'm texting my wife, sorry, texting my baby, sorry. Yeah.
Your baby is a phone? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah, man,
Yeah, but
dude.
on that. I thought about it. Residency is a lot of work, as you know, and as you have finished up, there's still great moments that you can think about, and you look back at residency as like this war you just fought through, and you're like this veteran, and now you just have this unexplainable confidence in everything. And I'm gonna attribute this to Alex Hormozi, who I really like on YouTube and social media. But something he says is confidence isn't self-affirmations you tell yourself in the mirror when you wake up, but it is from the irrefutable evidence that you've accumulated over a certain amount of time. And I realized that. So this trauma call that we have here, it's fucking wild. Like it is so much work, so much stuff, and such a wide array of things you get. But when I ended my 5th year, I came to this realization that nothing ever worries me. Like when I get called from the ED about, lateral canthotomy needs or patient bleeding out the face or an airway consult or whatever it could be, I'm just not fazed. I just like kind of walk on in and I like know what to do. And it's not that but in the past, I would have to fake that confidence. I would have to really act like I knew what I was doing. But now it's just work. And I realized that, Chief Year is great because now I've done so much work. I've done shit ton of work up to this point. That now I can just chill and really focus on living this experience, living out the surgery, really focus on the nuances. So I'm really excited for this final year, man.
You should be. You should be. And that, I mean, you earned it. You earned it up until this point. And now, like you were saying before, it's a time to teach, time to educate, and bring the whole team on board. I really like that. And your perspective on it, I think, is really solid.
I don't know how to say this in English. In Korean, there's a word called yoyu. It kind of means, how do I say? You're more like lighter. You're more free. You have more kind of room to just kind of relax. And that's how I feel coming to Chief here, that I don't need to steal every case. I don't need to have my numbers be boosted up. I don't need to cut every jaw. And so I want to spend this year teaching more because that's what I believe in. And I think it's in line with my brand that I have on Instagram.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just be a selfish bastard at the end of it. But time will tell. Time will tell. It's only day two, man. Who knows?
That's so funny. You young. You young? Is that I said? Did I say it correctly? You young?
Yo-yo, yo-yo.
Yo you. Yo
Yeah,
you.
yo-yo.
Yo you. Huh. I feel like I've heard that before. Yeah. No, it's
It's
gonna be a great year.
like this feeling of, I don't know. It's like when you're at like a you like wine. It's like when you're at a winery on the weekend. And you're just sitting there looking out at the sunset. You have your nice cob in your hand or something, or you have your Pinot. Your partners are laughing, and it's just like there's a nice breeze. Everyone's laughing, and you just sit there, and it's just very calm. You don't need to do anything. You don't have any greed. You're just sitting there. That's kind of how I feel right now in chief year. Just like, I'm just looking at this horizon. It's like, it's beautiful. I want to take care of everyone. Just looks great. Who knows? Shit's about to hit the fan probably with this trauma case. Yeah. I think humbleness is important. I think arrogance is what I do try to avoid in surgery. And I have been arrogant many times. It burned me every single time. Every single time I think it burned me.
Do you remember any recent times that you were arrogant? And
oh, man. I mean, I can talk about... Dude, I keep a log of all the cases I do, and I keep notes on them. And I mean, if I were to talk about my complications, man, it would be a 2-hour podcast. But I mean, there has been a time when I was, I wouldn't say arrogant, but overly confident in my placement of a Carol Gerard screw. And what I thought was the body of the zygoma, I thought I was in the meat of the body, you know, I'm like just in that center, right? I just got it in there. You know, we got an intra-op CT later. The reduction was perfect, just to cut to the chase. The reduction was perfect, but the Carol Gerard was very, very close to the orbital rim. You know, one more millimeter up or 10 degrees up, I would have been in the globe. And so that was a lesson that I learned, to never trust my initial instincts, especially when I'm arrogant or overly confident.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like you were overly arrogant. No, but that's excellent to take a step back. Did anyone else on the team learn from that day?
To not trust me with the Carol Gerard screw.
I thought you meant like with landmarks and like, oh, how do we prevent that from happening? Because we were talking about, you know, making sure.
Oh, yeah. No, thanks. No, thanks for giving me that kind of segue. Yeah. I mean, did anyone else learn? I mean, I don't know if anyone else learned, because I actually did that case by myself. I mean, it was a case when the attending was running another room. And so I was doing that case alone for most of it. And I think the learning point was when there's a significantly displaced zygoma, especially in the anterior posterior dimension, that zygoma is sunken deep in the face. So the body of the zygoma is not going to be as lateral as you think. Like, my cheekbones are humongous. They're out here. But if you were to punch me in the face and it goes in, it's going to go in and probably more medial, just from all the muscular pull.
Right, exactly.
So what you think is the body of the zygoma probably isn't the body of the zygoma. And so looking back, what I should have done is expose more, irrigate the shit ton out of it, get all the blood out of there so I can see exactly what I'm doing, and honestly, probably expose up to the orbital rim to make sure I'm not near it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the biggest learning point for me, that case.
Was that, where was your incision for that one?
Keen.
Keen versus open.
Yeah. Vestibular.
Excellent.
Yeah, I try to avoid a transcutaneous Carol Gerard screw. I try to save people's scars if I can.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good way to do it. But then, you know, it's exactly what you were saying before. It's hard to visualize everything from that aspect, right?
Yeah, you're working in a hole.
Oh my God, you're working a hole. You're working alone too. Did you have anyone helping you out? No.
No. I had those cheek retractors, and I had that in place, and that was my assistant that day. That was my intern.
Oh, dude, you're being really hard on yourself. But yeah, and that goes to exactly what you're saying before. Like, no one else was there to learn with you on that. Well, like, one, to help you out, but then to learn from you that lesson that you learned that day. No one else got that experience. It's such a great point. You know, we spend all this time on these other services. I mean, and some of them are needless. Why was I on bariatrics? I didn't even do a rotation on ENT, but I'm doing a rotation on MICU. But the 6 years don't even do MICU, and they have their MDs. Like, some of these rotations really need to be thought out a little bit better. And I think maybe if we spend a little more time on oral surgery service, you know, I mean, why do we need to have a year and a half out of 4 years? You have 2 years in med school and a year and a half, or year and a half in med school, year and a half in gen surg. Only about 3 years on oral surgery service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many questions I have.
Yeah, you know, so going back to that case of how I was the only one who benefited from that learning. It's so unfortunate, because you really have to be there to get that knowledge. And the best quote that really explains this and probably encompasses residency as a wholesome thing is, you know, experience is something you get just after you need it. And I love that quote, but I also hate that quote, because then how do I prevent my other colleagues from making the same mistakes that I've made? Or how can I help expedite their learning process? You know, and this is now a segue to a different quote. But, and now that I'm a father, I think about this a lot. You know, your job as a dad, or your job as a teacher or a learner, isn't to prevent the mistakes that you've made, isn't to teach the person behind you to avoid those mistakes. It's really, you've been through it, you've made those mistakes. You're really there to watch them make those mistakes and really counsel them afterwards and kind of coach them through afterwards. But you know what? I've humbled myself in a way in that, okay, I can't prevent my colleagues from making the same mistakes I've made. All I can be is just a resource, a mentor, how to troubleshoot afterwards or during. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the nature of life. You just can't prevent everything. You can't transfer knowledge from me to you. And so, you know, I'm never going to understand how you're so efficient with your, you know, social media workflow. And it's just something I have to just go through. Honestly, I've messaged on Instagram many times, like, how are you so efficient? What's your workflow? And you just keep saying CapCut and you like tell me these steps. But it's like, at the end of the day, I still need to go through the shit, make the same mistake, and probably just learn from it.
And you will. And you will. And you got to get back to what you love too. If you love podcasting, you got to do it. You're so good and talented with the posts that you're putting up on Instagram. I'm just saying, just put it all on LinkedIn too. You're going to see the results there, man. I'm telling you. But also, I think you're going to be a great father because the way you're applying the things that you're learning in residency and interns and senior level residents and everything and your leadership as a chief to being a father, I think it will carry over. And it might not be completely, you know, congruent with that. It might be different, you know, but you'll see the similarities. And yeah, that's something I want to learn about.
I hope so. I don't know if I'm a good dad right now. When I was on call last weekend, I gave my pager to my baby, who's 7 months. And of course, he didn't know what to do with it except stick in his mouth. I'm not sure if that's the most cleanest thing or if that's best for patient care. But it was a cute photo. It was a cute photo.
All right. Well, you know, sometimes photos last a lifetime, right? And then the pager goes off and now you're giving your kid trauma.
Yeah. You know, what's weird, it's about the pager. I mean, and we're getting close to time here, but I don't know if you've experienced this, and I don't know how long you've been with your partner, but what I thought was a very interesting Pavlovian, is that how you say it? Pavlovian response, the whole dog salivating with the bell. What I've realized and just experienced throughout residency is, like, when I get paged, no one has to say anything. I'm like with my family or with my wife or whatever. My pager goes off. Fun time's done. No one's talking. Marcus is not available. It's just like a given thing. And yeah. I'm curious to see how your life evolves in this next year out in chiropractic on how to getting rid of that from your family. I'm so excited for you because when I saw my wife, when I got paged and I saw my wife just all of a sudden go silent, it was just like, you know what? Fuck this. Like I don't want my kids to feel like fun time's over and playtime's done. It was just something I experienced recently. And so I just thought I'd mention it.
Yeah, man. It's such a great point. And it's part of the sacrifice that we make in this profession. And
I'm going to live vicariously through you, man. So you better post a lot of stories of your runs and your lifts and your winery visits.
Well, you're going to be there in a year. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine, man. You just got to get through the 1 year and really stick your head in everything that you possibly can. I mean, there's surgery, one thing, but then also doing things that you like. The more that you do throughout the day and the year, it's the faster it's going to go. But yeah, there was posts that I keep seeing going around starting a couple of years ago where it's a very old doctor and he's talking to one of those like famous podcast interviewers. And he was saying, he was making that Winnie the Pooh analogy where he was saying how he always loved the Winnie the Pooh at the end of it because it was like going into the woods or whatever it was. That was like imagination. Yeah. And he said, the more pressure, you're always constantly trying to get the next best score or see the next patient or, you know, do the next surgery. You kind of drown out the creativity and imagination that is one of the beautiful gifts of life. And so that was, I noticed the same thing in residency. When the pager goes off, your fun time's over. And it's like, but life should never have to stop things that you enjoy. And yeah,
as you can see, I love quotes. I like live off of quotes. It's like my personality, but there's a really popular quote that I think that goes on in our profession because it was said by an oral surgeon, actually, Brian Alpert. He said, residency doesn't have to be a Greek tragedy. And we all go into residency like it's our time in Vietnam. Like we're like ready to fucking fight in the trenches. And sometimes you just look up in the sun and it's a nice day. Like I don't think you have to suffer through residency. And though there is a fuck ton of suffering, there really is. You know, I want to spend the final year of my training just kind of enjoying the process, really. I don't think I enjoyed most of the residency process, but in the final year, I do want to enjoy.
Got to stay in Yuyang, right? Yuyang? Was that it?
Yo-Yu.
Yeah. I keep flipping the Yuyang. Yo-Yu. You got to perpetually in Yo-Yu. And yeah, do it. I don't know. I found I couldn't do that. I would look up to the sun and I would like feel it, but it's like I felt like I couldn't fully immerse myself in there until residency was over. And it's going to be a new set of responsibilities and stuff, but you have to have the self-awareness to recognize what's best for you. And that could be like ownership versus private ownership versus associate, but it's also in residency. Like, do you want more of this? Do you want more of this kind of, I don't know, the expensive hobby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I got to go get back to work. But yeah, you're going to the OR. How's it looking?
Pretty soon. I think I have to get going soon. Dude, but really, thanks for this time. I mean, thanks for being flexible with me. And, you know, this has been a good conversation with you. It's really nice to connect with you in person finally.
Me too.
Seriously, best of luck to your career, man. I mean, it's going to be an exciting time for you.
Enough about me, man. We're going to have a lot of parts. Part one, we're going to have a lot of good chats. Next time you have a little break in residency, we're going to chat again. No, it's going to be great. And I thank you for that, ladies. And congrats to you too, man. 6 out of 6.
Yeah. You know, maybe when I get my podcast up, I'll have you as one of my guests and interview you. I actually have a lot of questions. I tried to not ask you many questions during your, this is your show. I just didn't want to ask too many questions, but you would be one of the most interesting guests on a podcast. So, you know, next time. So? Oh, yeah.
You were awesome today. But, dude, like, it's a convo, right? We're chatting. It's like tennis. We're going back and forth. I love it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, dude, get that up. Get that podcast up and going. When it's not a trauma week, or maybe when you rotate to a less hospital, not the one where it's 365, head, neck, airway, the whole nine yards. Maybe not that one.
Yeah.
Maybe not that one. But, dude, if podcasting is something that you are passionate about, and anything that you're passionate about, don't let that fire go out. If you could start something during your chief year, you'll be able to start anything whenever you want for the rest of your life.
That is true. That is so true. Yeah, man, I actually have, you know, my posts do take a long time, but I have some things that I can announce in the works. And so it makes my post a little bit easier. So you'll see it someday. Hopefully, I'm planning to have it finished by sometime in chief years.
Sweet. And if there's anything I can help you out with that, please let me know. I love projects. I love side projects, businesses, the whole nine yards. Sounds like you have your wife there that knows how to do that stuff too, systems and processes. Hey, man, let me know. Let's launch it. You want to throw it up? Let's do it.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Do you think, is it going to be soon? Because when you're about to launch it, let's get on the pod, let's chat, let's talk it up.
Yeah. You know, I'm working on it. It's like 1% done. It takes a lot of work. And I've been waking up at like 3 a.m. every day to fucking work on this thing. I am hoping to,
3 a.m.
Yeah, dude. I mean, because I have to wake up early, work on some shit that I really need to work on. And then I study for boards. You know, I fucking have A-bombs in January. Studying for that, making sure my kid has enough formula for the day. Just grinding it out every morning. But yeah, I'm working on this thing and I'm hoping to somewhat get it done, I don't know, by February or March, you know, right before chief year ends. I'm trying to get it out and actually out there. So we'll see. We'll see, man. It's a lot. I don't know if I'll make it, but I'm going
to
try.
What time do you go to bed if you're getting up at 3 a.m.?
Dude, I'm going to bed at like 10. 3 to 4 is where I kind of wake up.
3 to 4. So you're only at 5 to 6 hours of sleep and you have the kids waking up through the night. That's chief year two on top. Oh my God. Trauma week. You're just getting hit with the hardest things right now.
Oh, but I'm still on this like chief high right now. Everything's good. I'm so happy. I'm trying to stay positive.
Yeah,
and you know, my one of my attendings, he's the most influential attending I actually had more regularly during my fifth year. He is an oral surgeon. He's retired and he just helps out at our program now. But he is just he is so antithetical to the personality of an oral surgeon. Like, he is such a humble, slow, calm, happy person, great to his family, has a great relationship with his wife and his kids, travels with them, doesn't have an ego, always willing to teach, always willing to help out. And I mean, he's had a pretty lasting impact on me coming into chief year on positivity and just being happy, not taking things so seriously. And
that's great.
Really, yeah, it really is. So I'm still on this chief high, man.
Yeah, do you find?
Yeah, he's a good mentor because he and I share the same interests. We both like cars. We love cars. We love oral surgery. We love traveling. He's been into planes now. He kind of left the car thing and he's now into planes. And so I feel a little betrayed, but I'm sure he'll come back.
What's your dream car?
Dream car? I don't have a dream car. I do have a car that I want to drive on a day-to-day basis. Like, as a daily driver, I want to have a dream car. Like, the pinnacle car that I probably want in my life one day is probably... I think critically about money, so I don't want to go crazy and get, like, a GT3 RS or, like, fucking... you know, Aventador or something. But a Lamborghini Huracan is, you know, something I'll probably get it someday.
Nice.
I'll probably get a GTS, you know, 911 GTS one day.
And, okay.
You know, my dream is to actually daily drive a 911 just because, I don't know, it's fucking cool. I want to have a car seat for my kid. I want to have a travel like luggage carrier thing on the top. Go
Nice.
skiing that way. Dude, that just sounds like such a nice life.
That does sound like a nice life. Yeah.
I'm a Porsche fan, that's why.
I
Love Porsche.
see. Ah, oh, that's a good one. That's a real good one. And then you could go right to the slopes right when you get out of work.
It's the perfect car. It's not flashy, it's fast, it's quiet if you need it to be quiet. I mean, dude, it's the perfect car.
It's loud when you need to be loud.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Awesome, man. All right, dude. Hey, well, I'll let you go. Let you do trauma case. I gotta go get back to some work over here. But
Yeah, dude, thanks for
thanks for
really thanks
going
for
on,
this
man.
flexibility, man. It was really good connecting with you. Like, off the record, you're inspirational. You have a phenomenal social media presence. I look at you a lot, and I look at your content. I'm like, huh, I should try that one day. I mean, my Instagram posts and stuff. You and I have completely different brands, but I look at you as almost like this like inspiration, and I'm like, I gotta follow this guy. I gotta chase where he's going.
You think
So,
so?
dude, so I'm really glad I got to finally talk to you.
Likewise, likewise. I would say the inspiration, just be yourself. Just maximally trial. Just do everything that you possibly can that you like to do. And you're doing. You're gonna be 3, 4 o'clock in the morning to fit everything in. You're studying for boards a little too early, my friend.
Dude, I don't know, man. I need to.
The boards will come. You're gonna be just fine for boards, I could tell you right now. But looking for the perfect practice, networking, talking to as many oral surgeons out there in the different practices that you might be interested in learning about them. I found out that this one in Green Bay, Wisconsin, great offer, but it was coupled with a hospital that was owned by surgeons. So
Okay.
as you worked your way into the practice, you were gaining equity in the hospital. It's
Oh,
like the
nice.
last hospital in the United States that's owned, that's surgeon run. But then it gave the surgeon the most autonomy. It sounds like they had the most autonomy for surgeons of any place that I heard of. So I didn't know that existed. And so the point of the matter is just to talk and learn from as many of these people as you possibly can. And I would say, I mean, it's very kind of you to say the inspiration. I learn from your posts all the time.
Hopefully
Just
so.
keep
Hopefully so.
pushing. Just keep more content, more work, more everything. I don't know. That's it. That's it, man.
Dude, thanks for your time, man. We'll talk
Yeah,
again.
you too. All right, brother. We'll chat soon. Good luck in the case. And if you can, just give it like 5 to 10 seconds for it to upload because there's a little lag on Riverside. But it should go soon.
In terms of like, don't log off right now.
Yeah, just wait. Like it's like 5 to 10 seconds. It'll say 100% uploaded, and then you're good to go when I hit
Yeah.
to end.
Yeah, on the right side, I see 100% uploading, but it keeps flickering back and forth between 100 and 99.
Yeah. You'll see it. It'll come in a second. All right, man. Good luck tonight. We'll chat soon. All right.
Cool, man.